You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, two student journalists from UW System Schools tell us what they're seeing on their own campuses after the administration announced budget cuts and layoffs earlier this semester. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you a student at a UW campus or parent thereof? How do budget cuts affect your educational experience? Are you in a major that's at risk of being phased out? Have you noticed class sizes increasing? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. First, a proposed power plant in Superior has been the subject of debate for years. Utilities say the natural gas plant would cut carbon emissions significantly, compared to coal. But to environmentalists, building a new plant that relies on fossil fuels feels like a step backward. Danielle Kading reports on a debate in northern Wisconsin with implications for the region's energy future.
Coal-burning power plants are bad for climate change. That's because burning coal releases a lot of carbon dioxide that contributes to global warming. Renewable energies like wind and solar are much cleaner, and they don't rely on fossil fuels. But the utilities say those energy sources just aren't reliable enough to provide power at all times, and battery technology isn't far along enough to make it through Wisconsin winters. That's why John Carr says power plants that run on natural gas are an important part of the transition to clean energy.
When wind and solar aren't quite enough to meet demand, it's there to ensure that that system is still reliable and affordable.
Carr is vice president for strategic growth at the La Crosse-based Dairyland Power Cooperative. Dairyland is part of a group of utilities in three states that's trying to build a new $700 million energy plant in Superior that would run on natural gas. They've been trying to build the Nemadji Trail Energy Center for 6 years. For many environmentalists, though, any new plant that still relies on fossil fuels isn't part of a clean energy transition. Jadine Sonada is the campaign coordinator for Sierra Club Wisconsin.
We need to be only investing in this clean energy and not simultaneously investing in the gas plant.
That disagreement is part of what has kept the Nemadji Trail project in limbo for so long. Dairyland has asked for a loan from the Federal Rural Utilities Service to pay for half the project's cost. That triggered an environmental analysis of the plant. The proposal has undergone multiple reviews as environmental and indigenous groups have fought it. Now a decision is drawing near. The Rural Utilities Service will decide whether building the plant will have significant environmental effects. One September evening, a small group is buzzing about the facility in a corner room of Superior's public library.
My main concern about that is that it would still generate fossil fuels.
That's Superior resident Kate Haga. The 23-year-old is worried about its effects on climate change. She points out natural gas production releases methane that has more than 80 times the warming power of carbon dioxide.
It's going to just speed up climate change rather than do what it's marketed to be, which is to be this bridge where we're addressing climate change.
Even with methane leaks, the Rural Utilities Service said in its latest review that the plant would cut carbon emissions overall each year by 770,000 tons compared to keeping coal plants online. But environmental groups argue the plant's carbon emissions are at least a million tons higher than the agency projected. And the Environmental Protection Agency says estimates of climate damages from the project don't look right either. Most everyone agrees that closing coal plants is a good thing. The debate is over what takes their place.
The natural gas plants are being built in part because of the rapid ramp down in coal-fired plants.
That's Karen Clay. She's a professor of economics and public policy at Carnegie Mellon University. If a plant isn't built, Clay says it may be more costly to bring in natural gas from elsewhere or maintain older coal plants. Minnesota Power has closed 7 of its 9 coal plants, and Dairyland closed one of its coal plants in southwestern Wisconsin 2 years ago. Utilities say the Superior facility will help Wisconsin meet its goal of providing carbon-free electricity by 2050. But UW-Madison energy expert Greg Nemeth says any new plants would release carbon dioxide beyond that date, or they'd have to shut down early.
We're going to be saddled with a lot of debt, and ratepayers are going to have to pay a lot for all these natural gas plants that we don't use anymore.
Now, some city leaders are withdrawing their support for the plant. They're concerned about its environmental effects as well as more local concerns. It would be built along the banks of the Nemadji River, and it's next to a cemetery with remains of tribal ancestors that were moved there to make way for a development that was never built. Some city council members say they'll oppose local permits for the project. Danielle Kading, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Now, a major round of layoffs was announced at UW Oshkosh last month. The news sent shockwaves around the campus, with nearly 250 university faculty and staff positions being affected by layoffs, voluntary retirements, and unfilled vacancies. And it's not just the UW Oshkosh campus. Many schools in the universities of Wisconsin are facing budget cuts following a recent mandate to get rid of structural deficits by 2028. Our next guests have been reporting on these and related issues for their student newspapers. They say student perspectives should be more front and center when university administration makes big decisions that affect their education. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you a UW student or campus worker? How have you and your campus been affected by recent budget cuts and layoffs? Do you have concerns about the future of the UW system? If you're a parent of a student or you're looking for a school to go to right now in your part of the state, what do you think about all this? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Aubrey Selzmeyer is a sophomore majoring in journalism at UW Oshkosh, an opinion editor at the Advanced Titan, an independent student newspaper. Aubrey, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And Jack Schindler Van Hoof is a third-year student at UW River Falls, studying English, creative writing, and journalism. He's president and editor for The Student Voice, a student newspaper that covers the university and surrounding community. Jack, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Rob.
Aubrey, let's start with you. You wrote a piece for the Advanced Titan when the layoffs were announced at UW Oshkosh. Can you talk about the kind of reactions you're hearing on campus?
Yeah, so I started with, it's called Minimal Impact on Students, with a question mark, because, I mean, we were told that none of these layoffs are going to impact us. But in the long run, I mean, we're losing mentors, our professors are losing colleagues and friends. It's a whole dampen in morale, which I think come spring, it's going to be even more of a news break, kind of brand new to us, because all of a sudden it's going to set in. It's going to be real. There's going to be empty classrooms. Emails are going to go unanswered. And I think we're going to lose things that we absolutely took for granted and we may not even realize yet.
And
so,
what kind of programs and campus services are most affected by the layoffs, Aubrey?
I know for sure that our study abroad is going to be severely affected. Our testing center, our writing center, they're cutting so many full-time employees from places that didn't have that many to begin with. So although we were promised that we would have, you know, continued study abroad opportunities in the future, they're going to be more reliant on these external programs rather than customized faculty-led programs, which is obviously, you know, super disappointing. We just introduced my freshman year, so last year, a student navigator program, which helps out first year college students, you know, just is someone for them to reach out to so they can ask questions, they provide resources. So that was just introduced and we're already cutting that program. So, I mean, it's things like that that are just going to amount to a lot of change, and it's disappointing.
And Jack, turning to UW River Falls, I've seen your campus as one that's had a budget deficit. I haven't heard about similar cuts to what we're seeing at Oshkosh, at least not yet. Are there changes being made, or is there a sense that something like that might be looming at UW River Falls?
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, as you mentioned, we have a bit of a different perspective here at UW River Falls than at Oshkosh. And we are experiencing a deficit right now, but it's rather small compared to what I've seen, between $1 and $2 million deficit, I believe, although it's somewhere in between there. So the sentiment here is for the last 8 weeks or so, the third party consulting firm Deloitte Consulting has been here on campus, and which has been met with a lot of concern from staff and faculty. So our perspective is we haven't necessarily seen those budget cuts yet. We haven't seen any layoffs yet, but just the general mood on campus is one of apprehension. I know a lot of faculty, a lot of staff, like staff I know personally, and then just staff in general who are very worried about those upcoming budget cuts. And so we're kind of waiting. We're waiting to see, and it's kind of a bit of an anxious time right now. We're hoping to hear more about what areas, what we'll see budget cuts, because we are going to see budget cuts. It's just up in the air as to what programs may be cut, Hopefully we won't see the amount of layoffs that happened at UW Oshkosh. I know when we heard the news about that, it was kind of, I feel like anyone at any UW system would have been very worried and just worried by that news, kind of fearing that that might happen to their university next. But right now we're just kind of waiting to see.
And Jack, you and a colleague at the Student Voice interviewed, as I understand it, a University of Wisconsin president, formerly UW System, Jay Rothman, when the Board of Regents was visiting your campus earlier this semester. What were some of your takeaways from that meetup?
Yeah, that was Lexi Janzer, the assistant editor for The Voice. And she, one of her questions was about the DEI programs. And because those are recently affected by a $32 million budget cut that was kind of designed by the state assembly to directly impact those programs. And Rothman, when we interviewed him, or when Lexi interviewed him, kind of expressed that that he and the rest of the system are dedicated to maintaining those DEI and diversity, equity, and inclusion programs, which affect students with disabilities, LGBTQ plus students, students of color, underrepresented groups like that. And Rothman expressed the sentiment that the UW system is committed to those individuals and to providing them with a college experience that will benefit them. But even then, it's difficult because of those that $32 million budget cut to the UW system. So we're seeing kind of opposition on both sides from the state assembly and then UW system officials, and just kind of a lot of tension going tension going on between those two parties right now.
Talking to student journalist Jack Schindler Van Hoof at UW River Falls, Aubrey Salzmeier at UW Oshkosh with us to talk about how budget cuts and layoffs at the Universities of Wisconsin are affecting students on their campuses. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Are we talking about you? Are you a student at a UW system school? Have you seen big changes, announced program cuts, layoffs, or maybe those things looming in the near future? Is it changing your experience on campus if you work at one of these schools we're talking about? Love to hear from you as well. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. We continue our talk with student journalist Aubrey Salzmeier from UW Oshkosh and Jack Schindler Van Hoof from UW River Falls about how budget shortfalls, layoffs, and other changes throughout the university system are affecting students' educational experience. You could join in at 800-642-1234. If you're a student, a parent thereof, an alum, or employee at various UW system campuses, what are you seeing? What are you worried about? Are there changes you'd like to see made? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller. Ken is with us in Cross Plains. Ken, hi.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
What did you want to bring up?
I'm a Wisconsin resident. I put five children through the Wisconsin system and have been studying diversity, equity, inclusion for the last 3-4 years. And I don't understand why our legislature is, taking away $32 million from the system because they're doing something that's really positive.
Ken, thanks a lot for the call. Aubrey, we heard Jack talk a little bit about this issue a few moments ago. What kind of things are you seeing at UW Oshkosh? Are you seeing changes to diversity, equity, and inclusion programs there, based on what Ken was talking about from the legislature?
I haven't seen those changes stated mm-hmm. yet, but it does look like a lot of our programs are going to be merging come spring and so on, which I know me and a lot of my writers at the paper are left wondering what this exactly means and how this high quality of support can continue to be given to students with less staff and double the workload for remaining staff members. I'm glad, that they're doing their best to keep these programs instated, but I also have to wonder how well this can go for anybody. I mean, we were told of the emergence, but no idea what it's going to look like come spring.
Thanks a lot for the call, Ken. Something I wanted to ask both of you about, in the legislature, and it seems like this is echoed in some cases by system administration, the idea that liberal arts programs should be cut or scaled back. Some schools, including UW-Green Bay, announcing cuts to certain majors, for example, in favor of more job-focused programming, maybe nursing or science and engineering-type fields. Jack, can you talk about that? Is this something you've seen at UW-River Falls or people are talking about or maybe concerned about that kind of change?
Yeah, well, as I mentioned before, UW-River Falls hasn't really seen any budget cuts yet. Mm-hmm. We're still kind of awaiting, like, the news might break literally any day now. So when it does, we'll have a lot to write about. But in regard to, you know, those liberal arts studies, we haven't seen anything cut yet, but in terms of like more, you know, more job oriented majors and programs like that, personally, from someone who's in the journalism, you know, comms, with comms as the umbrella, communications as the umbrella for the journalism department here, it's just very strange to me why liberal arts are being undervalued in the way that they are. Like communications, for example, like, talk to any business, any company, and I'm sure they'll say that they want their employees to, you know, have communication skills, to be able to talk with others, to be able to, you know, to be able to represent the company and such like that. And so communications is a course that's very applicable to any job you end up in. It's less so of a like a one-to-one correlation, like this major will go into this career, but it's universally beneficial for anyone who's going out into the workforce. And I think targeting liberal arts courses will really damage that sort of universal value that many of these courses offer.
And Aubrey, are you seeing this concern over the balance between liberal arts as a whole, particular majors versus more job-focused majors on your campus at Oshkosh?
Thankfully, we were promised that none of our majors are going to be eliminated, and students are able to rest assured that they will graduate with a degree in that major. But we have already seen paused enrollments for our school's theater major. So, I mean, it could be unfolding. I really hope not. But, you know, you never know. No idea.
Let's go back to our callers at 800-642-1234. Patty is with us in Manitowoc. Patty, hi.
Yes, I'm a grandma, but we have a whole bunch of family and relatives and grandchildren who have graduated through the UW system. Platteville, Milwaukee, UWGB, Madison, big time Madison, Oshkosh. I am of the opinion, well, you need to get the facts out there. The very people that should be listening to this information either aren't or refuse to. So please get these facts out on the airways and byways so that when it comes time to vote, we know who to vote for. And sadly, I have some younger nephews who are maybe switching to another party because they're disgruntled about how the planet is falling under the party. So please get the information out, and then no one can say that they weren't provided information.
Patty, thanks a lot for the call. Must have a pretty substantial sweatshirt collection from all those schools. But Jack, we've seen, and I believe in that interview your paper did with President Rothman, talking about advocating for state funding that slipped relative to other states when it comes to public universities. Is that something that you're hearing people talk about a lot?
Well, definitely. Yeah. Here at River Falls in particular, one of the things is one of the things that's going through the legislature right now is something called, we kind of refer to it just as our reciprocity bill. But essentially, out-of-state students from Minnesota mostly have to pay additional tuition, but that tuition doesn't go to UWRF. It goes to the state of Wisconsin. And one thing that we're trying to do reallocate that money, which is about $4 million a year, so that it'll benefit UWRF specifically. And that would help with, again, our deficit and running programs and would alleviate, I believe, the need for budget cuts in the future. So that's just one sort of government funding that we're looking into specifically. It's a specific example of that.
And Aubrey, are there things people are focusing on the UW Oshkosh campus when it comes to advocating for more revenue, whether it's from the state or wherever, coming to your campus?
I think that in total, there was a pretty big response, not only at UW Oshkosh from this news, but just across the UW system in general. And I think that response was absolutely heard by our upper administration, so much so that I don't think that they're going to ever withhold, you know, this information last minute or drop, you know, news as great as all of these budget cuts and staff cuts were. So I think there was a shockwave and it was felt, and it's going to change how information is distributed moving forward.
I will leave it there. Aubrey, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. Absolutely.
And Jack, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity.
Aubrey Salzmeier is a sophomore majoring in journalism at UW Oshkosh, an opinion editor at the Advanced Titan, that's an independent student newspaper on that campus, and Jack Schindler Van Hoof is a third-year student at UW River Falls studying English creative writing and journalism. He's the president and editor for the Student Voice, a student newspaper that covers the university and surrounding community. They joined us for a look at how budget cuts and layoffs throughout the university system are changing the student experience and how those issues could affect students' choices about which UW campuses to attend, what to major in, and more. You can keep sharing your thoughts. Email ideas@WPR.org. Coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, Facebook, Instagram, and other services provided by the Meta company face scandals over misinformation, abuse, and worse. A new book shares the inside story from employees who try to make things better. The author of Broken Code tells us more. Plus, it's this week's edition of Food Friday. A molecular biologist turned cookbook author joins the show to make the most of the flavors in a wide variety of vegetables. That's coming up tomorrow on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Outdoor activities like hunting and fishing have long been dominated by men, but a Wisconsin-based program provides opportunities for women to get started with the help of other women. The director of the Becoming an Outdoors Woman program joins us now to talk about what the program offers, share some of its history, and how you can get involved. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Are you a woman who loves the outdoors? How did you get started? What got you into it? Were there family members who trained you, or did you find it yourself? Have you been involved in this program yourself? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Peggy Farrell is the director of the International Becoming an Outdoors Woman program based out of the College of Natural Resources at UW-Stevens Point. She's the coordinator of workshops held in Wisconsin. Peggy, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Hello, happy to be here.
What are the goals of the Becoming an Outdoors Woman program?
Well, the mission is to break down barriers to participation of women in outdoor activities. So that's the simple statement. I think our goals are to create a safe, welcoming, empowering environment for women to maybe step outside their comfort zone a little to learn these new activities.
Tell us a little bit about the origin of Bo, of becoming an outdoors woman.
Sure. It started in 1991 as a result of a conference that was held at UWSP to look at what are those barriers to women to participate in the outdoors. And a lot of the barriers seem to point toward a lack of educational opportunities. So if there wasn't a place for women to go and learn, then it was decided that we would build one. So the very first BO program was held at Tree Haven Field Station in 1991. And after that, other states started to hear about this cool thing that we were doing in Wisconsin and called and said, how can we do it too? Now we're in 35 states and 7 Canadian provinces.
Now let's talk about one of the, well, you do a lot of different programs. Let's talk about something you might do here in Wisconsin. When a woman signs up and participates, what kind of activities are involved?
Anything you can do in the outdoors. So in general, we try to keep balanced programming with 1/3 hunting and shooting, one-third fishing and boating, and then that other third can be bird watching, wildlife photography, hiking, canoeing, camping, kayaking. And that means that there's something for everyone, because not everybody wants to sit in a kayak and not everybody wants to go out fishing. So we try to do a little bit of a lot of different things to create opportunities for everyone out there.
A key part of the program, as I understand it, Peggy, is that it's women participating in classes taught by other women. Why is that such a central part of BOW?
I think having a somebody to look up to, a peer who is doing things that you might think are challenging, but you see somebody else doing them and understand that you can too with the right guidance is really important. So we do have mainly women instructors, but we have quite a few men instructors too who are just excellent because of their patience and their familiarity with the program and their understanding of our approach to teaching in an inclusive and a safe and a non-competitive atmosphere.
Peggy Farrell is with us, director of the International Becoming an Outdoors Woman program based at UW-Stevens Point, talking about their programs and efforts to get women involved in, as we heard, a wide variety of outdoor activities. You can join in now at 800-642-1234. Whether you've done it with this program or not, are you a woman who is involved in hunting, fishing, hiking, and other outdoor activities? Did it ever feel like there were barriers to you as a woman to get into different types of outdoor stuff? Have you joined in as an instructor or a participant in the Becoming an Outdoors Woman program? Join in now at 800-642-1234 with your experiences. Maybe your questions for our guest. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Peggy, men, women, anyone, I've been talking to people lately saying we're seeing fewer people getting into hunting in Wisconsin and elsewhere in the country, getting into fishing, often because they didn't grow up with that. Can you talk about some of the barriers for anyone that might keep them from giving it a try, even if they are interested?
Sure. It can be hard to find a place to go to learn if you didn't grow up learning. For example, we do some special programming for the college students here at the university, because even though we've got the College of Natural Resources, which is well-respected throughout the nation, not everybody who comes here as a student has that background of hunting and fishing. And it can be a little intimidating when you're surrounded by a majority of people who might have been doing those activities since they were really little. So we offer Learn to Hunt programs for the college students, and we have both male and female participants in that. As a way of removing that barrier, again, of don't have a place to go to learn. So we make the place for them to learn. And sometimes they keep going with it long enough that they come back and help us out with instructing.
And can you talk about, you know, whenever I learn anything new, outdoors or otherwise, you know, I'm worried about looking dumb as I learn it, ask the stupid question, that kind of thing. How do you help establish that comfort level for somebody who might be, whatever, kayaking or fishing or you name it for the first time ever?
Yes, that's. I think that's true for all of us. I still have it. You know,
that's good to hear.
Nobody likes to look quote unquote stupid, but, you know, we start out all of our classes right away by saying, you know, no stupid questions. If you've got this question in your mind, there's a good chance that one or more people in the class have the same question too, so don't be afraid to ask. Sometimes we'll put out a little anonymous question box for when we take a break from classes, so that if somebody's really afraid to ask, they can put their questions in there. And the way we help people not feel like they look stupid is by setting them up for success. So if it's in a canoe class, we make sure everybody can learn how to get in and out of that boat without tipping over. And we're right there supervising it all. So there are always little things that you can do no matter what the activity is to set people up for success so that they don't feel silly. And if something goes wrong, like they swamp a boat, you know, we figure out ways to make the best of that too. Safety is always first and foremost, but we can also recover from little mistakes and still keep our chin up.
Now, a lot of the things you might associate with the outdoors might be warm weather through hunting season. There's snow on the ground now. Do you have winter-specific programming here in Wisconsin, or do you kind of hibernate through the winter?
No. If we're going to live in Wisconsin, we need to know how to get out there and enjoy it. So we do a winter workshop in February at Treehaven Field Station, which is actually part of the university, but it's a campus up between Tomahawk and Rhinelander. 3-day weekend, participants get to choose from cross-country skiing, snowshoeing, ice fishing, archery. We do some indoor classes because not everybody wants to be outside the whole time, like woodworking and fur sewing, and we'll do knot tying. So more than 20 classes, they get to choose four of those to participate in throughout the weekend. And some people wouldn't call Tomahawk up north if you're from Wisconsin, but being
depends on where you are, yeah.
Little further up north in that beautiful 1,400-acre property in the wintertime is breathtaking. We get people from all over the United States who come to that workshop. In particular, a lot of folks from southern states just think this sounds like a wonderful, fabulous adventure to participate in and then go home with bragging rights, because they might have like driven a truck across the ice, drilled a hole in the ice, pulled the fish out of the ice. So that's one of our most popular workshops.
We're talking to Peggy Farrell, director of the International Becoming an Outdoors Woman program based here in Wisconsin. Peggy also coordinates workshops held here in the state. And we're talking about what the program offers and how to participate. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Are you an outdoors woman in one way or another? How did you get started? Have you been doing it since you were a kid, or is it something you tackled later on in life? Does participating in male-dominated outdoor activities, hunting, say, fishing, kayaking, ever feel intimidating? Maybe public radio listeners aren't big outdoors people. I don't think that's true, but you're not calling in. Tell us your story at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can join in with your experiences or your questions. You can also post, by the way, over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation with Peggy Farrell, director of the International Becoming an Outdoors Woman program, or BOW, and coordinator of workshops held here in the state. She's talking with us about BOW, which offers the opportunity for women to learn outdoor skills, in many cases from other women. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you're comfortable in the outdoors, how do you encourage beginners, first timers? Have you participated in this program yourself? Love to hear from you now at 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's go to your calls now. Daryl is with us in Hubertus. Daryl, hi.
Hi. I've gone to BOW 10 times. First time I was very nervous. Walked in, I thought, what am I doing? I'm not athletic. I'm not even coordinated. And I don't do any of this hunting and fishing. And I said, when somebody asked me, how are you? I said, I'm not sure why I'm here. And so one of the women said, this woman needs a hug. So that's how it started. I've never used a power tool. I made a bird feeder. I went ice fishing early with an auger, dug the hole. It was 24 degrees below zero, by the way, not wind chill that day.
Wow.
Dog sledding, sewing with fur. It's just lots of things. Archery. My husband said, why are you taking all this stuff? I said, well, because I probably not could ever do any of it. I got to see what I'm missing.
Daryl, I have so many questions. First of all, since you had clearly some nervousness on that first day there, what got you to try it out in the first place?
I saw it in a Wisconsin National Field magazine that I get. And I thought, oh, just a little article. And I read it, and I thought, oh, well, I used to like walking around the woods when I was a little kid with my dad and stuff, but they hunted, I didn't. And I thought, well, I think I'll go. And none of my friends wanted to go, so I went.
And have you, any of those activities, are there things you do all the time on your own now, Daryl?
No, I do snowshoeing.
Oh.
I've got pretty bad arthritis right now, so that's about the best one I can keep up on. I love to wear my hat and my mittens that are just fabulous that I sewed with fur. I have fooled around with making soap.
Wow.
If we were still tent camping, but we're way beyond that, I love the cooking, outdoor cooking. But at this point, we aren't camping.
Gotcha. Daryl, thank you so much. Well, Peggy, a testimonial from somebody who had those last-minute nerves about it, but kept going back.
Oh, yeah, I recognize Daryl's voice. So nice to hear from you. And thank you for saying nice things about the program. I think captured really well what it's like for a lot of people where you're like, oh, what am I doing? What am I getting myself into? But in a very short amount of time, people just fit right in, start making new friends, feel at ease. And I say it's a little bit of voodoo magic when you put anywhere from like 50 to 100 women from all different walks of life, you know, different backgrounds, different ages, different education levels, ethnicities, all of that. Put them together for a whole weekend and everybody just takes care of each other. It's something you really have to go experience to get it. But it's what makes me so lucky to have this position and to be able to meet all those great women like Daryl.
Daryl, thanks a lot for the call. We'll go to Jennifer now in Eagle River. Jennifer, hi.
Hello. I attended four different bow workshops and hope to do so again, actually in preparation for moving from the city to the Northwoods of Wisconsin.
Oh.
So I would have a little Northwoods credibility. So I'm back in the city now, but thanks to Bo, I was able to embrace living in a very cold area and snowshoeing and doing some hunting and cross-country skiing and some ice fishing. And I became a Northwoods woman thanks to Bo teaching me how to be a outdoors woman. It's such a wonderful welcoming program, and the evening camaraderie activities are really nice too, in addition to the workshops. And Peggy Farrell is just the most amazing person. So everyone should take a bow workshop.
Jennifer, thanks so much for sharing that experience. Now, Peggy, Jennifer was kind of prepping for a move to this from the city to the Northwoods. Do you get that a lot from people saying, you know, where I've lived or in my background, I haven't had a lot of this exposure, and they're kind of doing that boot camp to get ready to get involved in that sort of thing?
Yeah, I think Jennifer is the fourth person who's told me that they came to Bow because they were making that move from the city, either Milwaukee or Chicago area, to start a new part of a new chapter of their life up north, and they wanted to get some skills to be able to fit in. So I think that's really interesting, and thank you, Jennifer, for your call.
Thanks for that call, Jennifer. Rachel is with us now in Eau Claire. Rachel, hi.
I wouldn't call myself a full survival woman. I'm still working on my skills, but I initially got into it with historical reenactment, so lots of, like, knots and getting down and dirty and things like that. And there is a lot of intimidation for me, especially with the historical context of men and women and stuff like that. But when people bring up that they think they've survived the longest in a zombie apocalypse, I do get quite defensive because I am proud of the skills that I do have.
Rachel, thank you so much for sharing that. I'd probably get on pretty fast in the zombie apocalypse. I'm not fooling myself. Rachel, thanks a lot for that, though. Down and dirty kind of survival-type skills. Peggy, is that not tying Rachel mentioned? Are those some of the skills people might pick up in Bow?
Yeah, we do a survival class in the fall in October, and then one specifically for winter. And those are always jam-packed, full classes. Lots of people want to learn those skills, some because it's a novelty, like to make a snow cave and see if you can make it outside the whole night in your cave, and others because they really seriously want to learn these skills in case they need to put them to good use. So Yep, we do that stuff.
Thanks for the call. We're talking to Peggy Farrell with the Becoming an Outdoors Woman program. It's international. It's based here in Wisconsin. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Started here in Wisconsin, for that matter. Amy is with us now in Iola. Amy, hello.
Hi. Hi, Peggy.
Hi, Amy.
Hi, how are you? It's so good to hear your voice. I ran in. Peggy was also, Becoming an Outdoors Woman was also a haven for me as I ventured into, surviving, going back to college as a non-traditional student. But I also, Peggy took me on as an instructor 1 year for teaching a little bit about upland game bird hunting and training bird dogs. So that was really, really fun. And I'm wondering if you still do that.
Oh, we do. Yes. And so I've got a big list of things on our website for a schedule of like over 17 different events. And Amy, you're always welcome back. So if you find you've got time and you want to run some dogs, let's do it.
Thanks for the call, Amy. Rachel joins us now in Lake Geneva. Rachel, hi.
Hi there. I just wanted to make a comment that I actually work in the outdoor industry as an arborist, and we have seen plenty of females come through the company that I work for, and women make excellent tree climbers and learning knots and all sorts of different things, and the culture around it is just so supportive, and it's a great place to be immersed in the outdoors while also earning a living.
Rachel, thanks a lot for sharing that with us. Peggy, I wonder if somebody like Amy with the bird dogs wanted to get involved as a teacher, or maybe somebody like Rachel as an arborist wanted to share her knowledge and skills with others. How do people get involved with Bo as instructors?
Yeah, we're always looking for new folks to come on board. So excited to hear from both of those ladies. I think the best way to get a hold of me is to call me in my office. And I can provide a number if you would like.
Oh, yeah, go for
it's
it.
715-346-4681.
And we'll also get a link to your website over at WPR.org/Central Time. Time for one more caller. Jason is with us in La Crosse. Jason, hello.
Hi.
What do you want to tell us about, Jason?
Yeah, up here in La Crosse, they have the Sarah Hogan Foundation where they bring in law enforcement to take youth out and go fishing. Kind of neat. They get police officers, DNR officials, firefighters. They even get the Gunderson Medevac to come in, and they get to see that too. So they go out and fish, and it's a great time.
Jason, thanks a lot for sharing that resource in the La Crosse area. And that reminds me of something I wanted to ask you, Peggy. Is Bo for grown-ups, or are there programs for girls as well?
Bo is for anyone 18 and older, and sometimes we do have male participants. Not often, but we don't discriminate. I wish we had more resources so that we could offer, maybe family programs or moms and daughters or programs just for daughters. I have collaborated with other organizations that have served kids, younger kids, and I enjoy that, but right now, it's not on the docket for Wisconsin. Some of the other states offer Becoming an Outdoors Family programs that are really successful. We just need to get a little more people power and a little more in the finances to make that happen here.
Thanks a lot for that call. And Peggy, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
That's Peggy Farrell, director of the International Becoming an Outdoors Woman program based out of UW-Stevens Point and coordinator of bow workshops held here in Wisconsin. She talked to us about the types of workshops and trips offered through the bow program and how to get involved. You can find more info or share your own experiences over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Again, we'll get a link to that organization and how to get involved at WPR.org/Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Stick around. There's more to come here on Central Time on the Ideas Network.